Welcome to Heartline. I'm Rita Schulte, a licensed therapist in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, and I'm passionate about matters of the heart. I want to check the pulse on your heart by taking a look at some of the cutting-edge issues that are affecting you and the people around you, and have you consider, how in the world is all this mess called life affecting your heart? To help stir things up, we're going to be talking to some of the leading professionals in the Christian counseling and literary industry, as well as hosting discussions with real people who are struggling with real life issues. If you want to know a little bit about me, check me out at siftedaswheat.com, where you can ask questions, find out about my book, listen to other podcasts, or request to be a guest on the show. You can also find me on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or follow me on Twitter at Heartline Pod. So let's get going on this journey of the heart. In the 60s, people began popping pills like Chiclets to escape reality. The hallucinatory effects of psychedelic drugs like LSD and psilocybin mushrooms were highly sought after. Fast forward 50 years, and we're popping even more pills. But these pills are medically subscribed, and we take them in the hopes that they will somehow alter our psyches and help us deal with the anxiety, depression, and psychosis causing us so much pain. Enter Dr. Paul Meyer, who some have called the founder of modern-day Christian psychiatry, and Christianity today is called a modern-day reformer. Dr. Meyer is a nationally recognized psychiatrist, founder and medical director of Meyer Clinics. He's been the guest on numerous TV and radio programs, including Oprah Winfrey. He's authored or co-authored over 90 books that have sold more than 7 million copies in more than 20 languages. In 2006, Dr. Meyer was named as a Physician of the Year. Today, we're going to talk about one of his many books, Blue Jeans. Dr. Meyer, welcome to Heartline.
Hey, my pleasure, Rita.
The title of your book suggests that you believe that some people are genetically programmed to be blue. Is that true?
Yeah, definitely. And here's a good way to explain it. We see, you know, we've got a national chain of clinics, the Meyer Clinics, and we see about 1,000 people a week. And half of them are probably for depression. And about 3 out of 4 just get Christian counseling and sometimes, you know, recommendations for vitamins or for nutrition and things like that, and without any medication. And some have a temporary severe enough crisis where they need medication for a while, but they won't need it later. But about maybe 20% of the population inherit some degree or some form of depression. And we eat tryptophan in our diets, for example. If you eat a banana, that's why you never see depressed monkeys. They're always, you know, laughing and hugging and stuff. But anyway, because they eat a lot of bananas. But if you eat a banana, for example, it's got tryptophan in it. It's got vitamin B6 in it, which transports the tryptophan into the brain. The brain then, God set up our brains, so it converts it into serotonin, S-E-R-O-T-O-N-I-N, which is the happy chemical.
Right.
And then we have reuptake sites that suck up the old serotonin to replace it with the new and keep it in balance. And when it's in balance, that's what God uses to give us love, joy, peace, patience, good sleep at night. And so if that's low, you're depressed. And if it's high, you're happy. And various things like grudges and bitterness and stress and things like that can deplete it. Too much alcohol can deplete it and things like that. But some people, maybe 20% of the population, inherit reuptake sites that suck up too much. And so they just are going to stay depressed their whole lives unless they take a medication. No amount of counseling is going to do them any good. Just like some people inherit diabetes. And if they do, they have to have insulin. And if they don't, they're going to die. And some people inherit a low thyroid. And so if they don't take thyroid medicine, a lot of them are going to, they're going to die, you know, because we have a fallen world, so the brain is just one more organ. So sometimes the brain will be low in a chemical just like any other organ.
Right. So chronic stress really helps to deplete the serotonin and some of the other neurotransmitters that we have?
Yeah, and there's other neurotransmitters too. Norepinephrine is another important one that it gives us joy, but it gives us focus, concentration, motivation, energy, and things of that nature. And then there's dopamine that gives us sanity. So if a person got so depressed that their dopamine got involved, which happens to one out of 33 people in the United States, then they temporarily become psychotic, and they might hear voices or have delusions or think people are reading their mind from the satellite or that they have supernatural powers, or a really nice, sweet person could even go kill somebody.
Hmm.
I had a patient, I've got a patient that I've been seeing for about 10 years, and 10 years ago, and she's a real sweet missionary, loves her kids, loves her husband, but 10 years ago, she got so depressed from postpartum depression that she lost touch with reality and thought she was God, thought her husband was the devil, and in the middle of the night, got up and got a butcher knife and was getting ready to kill her husband. And she wouldn't have known what she was doing. Fortunately, God woke him up in time, and he wrestled her to the ground and called his neighbor who came over, and they got her in a hospital, and then they sent her. She was in a foreign country. And so they called me up because that mission board uses a lot of my books there. And I said, well, you know, since she gets, here's one medicine that she can get in that poor country, and then get her on some of that for a little while, for a few days, and then fly her here to Dallas and we'll treat her. So she came to Dallas and we put her on a dopamine medicine, and 8 days later, she was totally normal again and couldn't believe what she almost did.
Mm.
And I've been seeing her once every 3 months ever since. Now for her, we're keeping her on an antidepressant and a little bit of a dopamine medicine, just for more for her husband's security than for anything else.
Yeah, exactly.
But she's been great ever since. You know, so our chemicals can get messed up.
Why in the world are we still so hung up on taking medication for mental health disorders? You talk about a story in your book about a young Israeli social worker who traveled to one of your clinics to receive treatment for severe OCD.
Yeah.
And she was treated with serotonin, and she got better, and then she went back, and her synagogue convinced her that she was wrong to take the medications, that she didn't have enough faith, which I hear that a lot in my practice. And then she relapsed and actually killed herself.
Yeah. She was a really sweet gal. I've taught in countries, you know, I've written 92 books that have sold 7 million copies in 20 languages. So I've taught Christian psychiatry around the world. I taught in Israel 5 years in a row.
Uh-huh.
And so there was a gal, this social worker was actually an Israeli, but she was a Messianic Jew, which means she went to a synagogue on the Sabbath and things like that, but she believed Jesus is the Messiah. And they put faith in Christ just like anybody else. You know, that's a Christian, but she was a Christian Jew, which they call a Messianic Jew. But anyway, she was a real sweet social worker, but she inherited a low serotonin level. And when that happens, not only are you depressed your whole life, but you're usually more perfectionistic too. So she had to do things in twos, and she had to touch things sometimes, and she had songs that wouldn't leave her head and different things. But she had negative thinking, and she actually was so depressed that she had suicidal thoughts that she fought her whole life. And finally, you know, when she heard me lecture, she ended up coming to America where I treated her, and I just put her on a simple serotonin medicine and you know, when you take an antidepressant, people think it makes you falsely happy. It doesn't. If a happy person took an antidepressant, they wouldn't be any happier.
Mm.
All the antidepressants do is block some of the reuptake sites. They're called selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, if you want to be technical, but they block some of the drains. So I gave her a serotonin medicine that blocked some of the drains that were sucking up too much serotonin, and she got perfectly happy, and the OCD, all the perfectionistic traits went away, and she had the joy and all that. But she went back to a synagogue, a Messianic synagogue that was still behind the times, and so they taught that any kind of medication is sin, and they said you need to rely on just the prayer and the Bible. Well, I mean, you know, if that were true, then you'd need to do that for diabetes. You'd need to do that for thyroid. You'd need to do that. If you had cancer, you might as well not get surgery either, you know. And so there'd be, you got to remember, everyone Jesus ever healed died of something else later, you know. So he doesn't promise us we're not going to have diseases or perfect bodies here on earth. So they talked her into quitting, and when she quit, she got suicidal again and ended up hanging herself and dying. But after that, the church figured out that they had made a mistake, and now they pass out copies of Blue Jeans.
Really? Praise God.
About. And here's an illustration, Rita, that I like to give people that are super spiritual in that regard. And there's a reason why they got that way in the first place. There's a lot of people that don't need antidepressants, that are living sinful lives and doing all sorts of things wrong, and they don't want to be depressed about it, so they take an antidepressant to help them hang on to serotonin, and sure enough, they do feel better just by hanging on to more serotonin without changing their lives, and for them, it's a cop-out. See, so I wouldn't even give an antidepressant to somebody that's not getting counseling, unless they had a genetic depression. But for people that need it, you have to have it. And here's an illustration that helps people understand it in a practical way. If you ran out of gas, Rita, today on your way home, and so you coast off to the side of the road, and then you pray, "Dear God, please make my car run without gasoline." Could he do it? Of course, he could make your car fly. You know, if you wanted to, would he do it? I doubt it, because he wouldn't want to spoil you. He'd say, "No, you know, get off your rear end and go, you know, walk to the nearest gas station, and I'll protect you, and you go get some gas." And your brain's gas is serotonin. Your car runs on gasoline. Your brain runs on serotonin. So if you're out of gas, fill the tank. The Bible says laughter does good, like a medicine does. And my wife and I recently read through the book of Revelation together for our devotions. And even when there's even during the 1,000-year reign, when Jesus comes to rule on earth and there's a new Jerusalem floating overhead, and those of us with perfect bodies are up in that one, and the ones with normal human bodies are here on earth. And we won't get into eschatology because we'll get in an argument with some people. But anyway, it says that there's 12 kinds of trees in the New Jerusalem near the throne of Jesus, running by the river of water that goes by there, and 12 different kinds of trees. And it says, and we'll use those leaves to make medications to bring down here to heal the nation. So even in the 1,000-year reign, I'm going to be a doctor and pass out medications to people that need it on planet Earth. And yeah, could Jesus wave a magic wand and make everybody well without it? Yeah. But, you know, when you have fallen bodies, he expects us to be practical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, do something about it. What about ruminating thoughts? That's a huge problem for many of my clients. And I see people that have OCD and things like that, and they take a couple of drugs, they don't help, and they give up.
Each antidepressant works about 3 or 4 times. And so, if one doesn't work, then you know, and there's, unfortunately, some will get on one and the doctor will leave them on it for 10 years, even though it doesn't do any good. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Or a family doctor will put them on it and give a good medicine at about half of a minimal dose that would even work. That's why it's better to see a psychiatrist. But if a person normally is happy and then they're having thoughts that are bugging them, then that's more of a spiritual thing, and counseling would take care of that. They wouldn't even need medication. But if somebody has ruminating thoughts and obsessive thoughts their whole life, that, you know, ever since they're a little child, then it's probably inherited. And that's one of those things where that's usually a serotonin thing, where their reuptake sites are sucking up too much. And so if they take any serotonin medicine, like, you know, Prozac, Zoloft, Lexapro, Celexa, Cymbalta is a really good one, Prestique, you know, there's a number of them. But if they take any serotonin medicine, it doesn't do much good at first. It takes about 6 or 8 weeks for it to have a full effect.
Mm-hmm.
But 3 out of 4 times it'll work if you're on the right dose. And then at the end of 6 weeks, the ruminating thoughts just go away without you don't have to even try to make them go away. They just go away.
Right.
So that's how you can tell which ones are genetic and which ones are spiritual. Because if you're having a spiritual conflict, that'll still be there.
Right. Sometimes you have to be willing to try a couple of different medications, make sure you're on the right dosage to see if some of this abates.
Not everybody that's listening to us right now has had statistics, but the odds that you'd have 2 in a row that won't work are 1 chance in 16. The chance that you'd have 3 in a row that won't work are 1 chance in 64. And the chances that you'd have like 8 in a row that didn't work are about, you know, 1 in 100,000, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it takes, you have to try each one for about 6 weeks to see if it's going to work. And so you take an antidepressant, it may not feel like it's doing any good for you for a while, but then it helps build the serotonin up gradually. And then when it gets to a decent level, then you feel great. And I ask people when they come back, I'll start them on one and see them about 4 or 5 weeks later. And I say, now on a scale of 1 to 10, if 10 is bliss, and 1 is feeling like dying every day, and 5 is as happy as the average American, where are you most of the time now? And if they say, oh, I'm a 5 now, I say, well, that's not quite good enough. Let's up the dose.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to average being happier than average. And, you know, they need to be a 6 or a 7 or an 8 before I'll quit messing with their medicine.
Yeah, well, you also tell a hilarious story. I'm thinking about people with anxiety, because what happens when you tell an anxious person they need to go on medication? You know, they freak out. They're anxious. And so you told a hilarious story in the workshop I did with you in Branson about how you handle that. Can you share that?
People that need medication the most, that are low, and I'm one of them. I take an antidepressant. My mom did too. My mom lived to be happily up until she was 97. You know, mm-hmm. she was a happy Christian. And
genetics.
And, when she was on one, and I take one, and I think it'd be a sin for me not to take one, because I wouldn't be as efficient. I take an ADD medicine too, so I can get a lot done and do it in a happy attitude if I take a couple of medications to overcome some genetic mm-hmm. deficiencies I got. But people that are low in serotonin are usually a lot more perfectionistic. And if you're perfectionistic, you become more controlling and you hate to take medicine. They'll spend a lot of money on junk from a health food store that's dangerous. They'll spend $300 or $400 a month, but they won't spend $4 a month on Prozac that would cure them.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're afraid to take medicine. So, because they're afraid they're going to lose control, when in reality, the medicine gives them control over their lives. And so because of that, they'll take any medicine, and the fear of the medicine makes them have heart palpitations, and they might get a headache. They have all sorts of things that they think are side effects, but all it is a fear of taking the medicine. So when I give them somebody that's a real perfectionist, I start them on a medicine. I say, okay, just lick it the first two nights, or look at it for two nights, see if you get side effects by looking at it, and then lick the outside of the capsule for a couple nights, and then open up the capsule and take a couple of grains of it. And then work your way up slow, because even if you did have side effects on one of these medicines, if you kept taking a low dose of it, the side effects would almost always go away. And then if they don't, you just switch to a different one.
Absolutely.
No big deal.
That's so cute. Do you think we're over-medicating today? I mean, everybody seems to be on something.
Yeah, see, and that's where you don't want to throw out the baby with bathwater. Yeah, I think that's why some pastors say, you know, throw away that, you know, and they shouldn't say that, because some people will misunderstand it. Like they'll say, throw away that Xanax and rely on the Lord. Well, some people need to throw away their Xanax and rely on the Lord. They shouldn't do it all at once, because they could have a withdrawal seizure. But some people, there's a lot of people that have spiritual problems that could be resolved in counseling that end up taking anxiety medicines and this medicine and that medicine and just to cover up their symptoms. And that's wrong. And now, if a person's going through so much stress, you know, a divorce or death or things like that, that they temporarily need some of that, that there's nothing wrong with that to carry them through so they're not in pain. I can take anybody that's had panic attacks for 30 years and end them that day.
Mm-hmm.
Anxiety, depression takes weeks, but anxiety you can get rid of in about 10 minutes.
Right.
And they won't have any more if you use medications. But most anxiety is a fear of finding out the truth about our own thoughts, feelings, and motives. And so when we're, and nice people get anxiety more than jerks do, because really nice people are afraid.
Yeah, I have anxiety. I've struggled with anxiety in past years.
Yeah. So when they get counseling, they figure out what they're afraid to look at, and the anxiety goes away. But in the meantime, panic attacks are real painful. So I'll give them something where if you do start getting a panic attack, take this clonazepam. If you're in a hurry, chew it, and it'll work in a minute. If you mm-hmm. take the pill, it's working 10. And for 8 hours, you can't have one if you try to.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't want people to suffer needlessly, but at the same time, I want them to get counseling to resolve.
Yeah, there's deep-seated issues.
If it's genetic, then they may need to take a lifelong medicine that'll keep anxiety away, like, you know, Lamictal or one of the GABA medicines. GABA is a chemical God put in our brains to put the brakes on our worries. And some people didn't inherit enough GABA, so they need something like Lamictal or things like that.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about sleep problems, because it seems like everybody has those. What are some of the physiological and psychological problems that are the root of sleep issues?
It's a good question, Rita, that people that are worrying about things have trouble falling asleep. But then once they do, they usually sleep through the night. People that have a low serotonin level, either because of bitterness or grudges or guilt or false guilt or genetics or drinking too much alcohol or smoking pot, all those things deplete serotonin. But people that have a low serotonin level will wake up like 3 or 4 nights a week or more at about 3 in the morning, and it'll take them an hour to get back to sleep.
Mm.
So anybody that's waking up in the middle of the night and it's taking them a long time to get back to sleep probably has a low serotonin level. And if they took an antidepressant, then within a few weeks they'd be sleeping like a baby. If you're just having trouble falling asleep, then you probably need some counseling and to figure out what it is, you know, and learn how to give God the night shift.
Sure. What about Ambien and some of those drugs? I've been reading some studies on Ambien that aren't so great.
Okay. There's three different kinds of, there's three sleeping pills that are not technically addicting. You know, Sonata is the mildest one. Lunesta is a really good one that's moderate. And then Ambien's a real powerful one. And it can be habit forming, but it's not really addicting.
But doesn't it lose its efficacy after you take it for a while?
No, usually not. Some people take it their whole lives.
But do you need more of it to get the same effect? Like you start out?
No. Okay. Usually if 10 milligrams works now, 10 milligrams will work 40 years from now.
Okay.
You know, it usually will work. But if people need an antidepressant, we try to use the mildest, non-addicting one that'll get them through a good night's sleep until they don't need it anymore. And if their serotonin level is normal, then they should be able to sleep fine during the night with or without a sleeping pill. And if they're counseling, if they've had counseling so they learn how to not worry so much, you know, then they should sleep fine. But if somebody needs to take an antidepressant, they can. Ambien, a study came out last year that showed that people that take Ambien every night for their whole lives have a somewhat higher death rate. Well, I don't think the Ambien causes it. I think people that need Ambien all their lives are more likely to be alcoholics because they have trouble sleeping, or to have various mental disorders that may be life threatening, and so I think it's more of a coincidence.
There's other contributing factors. Maybe the study wasn't looking at.
Yeah.
How about postpartum depression? You mentioned that a little bit ago. Why does that happen, especially if a woman's had one or more children with no depressive episodes before?
80% of women get some degree of postpartum depression, and there's a number of reasons. And then some people get it really bad, and then some people, like that missionary I told you about, get so bad that she almost killed her husband because she went psychotic. And there are mothers that are really sweet moms that get so depressed that they become psychotic and kill their kids that would never, ever have done it, that don't know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And when they get on a dopamine medicine and they're normal a week later and their kids are dead, I mean, you know, what do they do about it? You know, they're heartbroken. There's a number of reasons. One is usually you lose a little bit of blood when you have a baby, and so when you're anemic, you're more depressed. Your hormones are shifting, so that can make you more depressed. The baby's waking you up a lot during the night at first, and so if you don't get enough sleep, then you get more depressed because you build up your happy chemicals while you're sleeping at night. So anyone that's sleep-deprived will get depressed eventually. And then your husband doesn't help you as much as he said he would, and your mother-in-law is staying with you to help you out, but she's rearranging your furniture and telling you what to do.
Yeah.
And when you're a little girl, you probably played with dolls. And I know my sisters had dolls where if they wanted it to cry, they could squeeze it and it would cry. If they wanted it to wet, you know, they could do something else. I don't forget how they did it, you know, squeeze it somewhere else and it would wet, and then they'd dry the diaper. And if they wanted it to cry, they'd turn it upside down and they would have tears. And then when they wanted it to go to sleep, they'd lay it down and the eyes would shut, you know.
Yeah.
So it did whatever they wanted to do. And so you grow up thinking, oh man, you know, having a baby is going to be so much fun. And then when the baby really does, and then you go to Lamaze classes and they tell you it's not going to hurt, even though the Bible says it will. So you better trust the Bible. But you can do Lamaze just to learn exercises so it'll hurt less, but it's going to hurt. So anyway, so they go have a baby and it ends up hurting when they don't think it's going to. And then the baby's crying and snot's coming out of its nose and belly button and crud it's urinating on you, and everywhere there's a hole, something's coming out of it, and it doesn't go to sleep when you want it to, and it wakes you up in the middle of the night. So when you have a baby, the reality of it is not at all like you thought it was going to be when you're a little girl raising your doll. And so the first baby is usually the toughest one to adjust to, and after you've had a few, then you know what to expect, and it's not quite so bad. But
yeah,
that's why I think that expectations is another reason for a lot of postpartum depression. And then when you're pregnant, for the first time, you also have normal fears. And it's okay to be scared. Nothing wrong with that. But some Christians are so perfectionistic, they feel embarrassed that they have these fears, and so they don't tell anybody, and they stuff it, and then they get depressed just from,
yeah.
You know, you need to say, boy, I'm, you know, part of me is upset. I'm going to have to, you know, it's going to be a financial struggle, and I enjoy my job. I'm going to have to give it up or work part-time, and it's, you know, I'm going to love the baby. I'm going to be a great mom, but part of me is frustrated. You know, that's normal. Mm-hmm. And so if you can talk about stuff like that, you're less likely to get depressed. Pretend like you're perfect, then you're more likely to.
I love that you have a chapter on loneliness in the book. Can you talk about how loneliness can be influenced by genetics and environment and life choices?
God made us so we all need to love and be loved. And in order to really enjoy life, even psychiatry researchers show that you need to have one or two people in your life that know all your secrets and love you just the way you are. I've got a prayer partner that we email each other or visit or whatever, and we can share anything with each other. And you need to have a prayer partner, and then share other things with your mate. And you need to have a couple people that you can share things with. And a lot of people, especially in modern culture, don't do that. If you ask somebody that's 21, 22 years old, how many friends do you have that know all your secrets and love you just the way you are? And they usually tell me, you mean people exist like that? Because they have 1,000 Facebook friends, but they don't have a single one they can share their gut level feelings.
Oh, you're so right on.
And so it's mostly a cultural thing, but some people are born shy again. And that's more of a GABA thing. Some people, there might be 6 kids in a family and 5 of them are extroverts and one's just shy from birth on, where they have social phobia and they can be that way their whole lives. And I can put them on a GABA medicine like Neurontin or Lamictal and 4 days later, they're normal. You know, in fact, I had a patient who had extreme social phobia his whole life, and yet he made it through school, made it through college. He just never joined any clubs. He couldn't go to any parties. But all I did was give him the medicine that made up for a genetic problem where he just didn't have enough GABA, so I gave him some.
Wow. Amazing work you're doing. You have been just a pioneer in this field, and I just so appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to be with us today.
Okay. My pleasure, Rita.
For joining me today. If you have a question or comment, or you'd like to be a guest on Heartline, I'd love to hear from you. You can contact me at siftedaswheat.com, on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or Twitter at Heartline Pod. And remember, it's your heart. Keep it alive. Check the pulse.